This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication. Welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with Kenneth Eadie about his book, The Involuntary Spy, part of a continuing political thriller series. The hero of the book is Seth Rogen, an American geneticist, a scientist who, while working with the world's largest and most powerful company involved with GMOs and a variety of agribusiness products, ranging from seeds to pesticides, discovers certain dangers inherent in the genetic engineering of food crops. Having embarked on his profession with Germinat with the best of faith, he is highly disturbed that the health benefits of this company's GMOs are negligible, but their possibility of causing chaos and destruction in the human body, both in the short and long run, are virtually endless. In his research, he finds a peculiar motivation for much of the GMO projects, a pesticide that the novel calls cleanup. Now, this novelistic contention is not far from a real-world problem connected with a company called Monsanto and a pesticide called Roundup. Can you explain this real-world problem, Ken, and compare it somewhat to the problem Seth finds with cleanup?
Sure. The real-world problem that you're speaking about is that most of the GMO products that are made nowadays are products that are called Roundup-ready foods, which means they're resistant to Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, which is the primary ingredient in Roundup is called glyphosate. And that's a chemical that Monsanto originally designed to kill weeds. It was discovered in the 1970s. It was a highly effective herbicide. And in fact, it's the most widely used herbicide in the world. Now, since Monsanto's patent was nearing its end, it needed to engineer crops that were resistant to glyphosate to continue its monopoly on the herbicide market, and that's exactly what they did. Glyphosate will kill everything on a farm except for the crop that's particularly planted there, which means it kills all the weeds that may be beneficial to the ecosystem, including milkweed, which is the primary source of food for the monarch butterfly. And in the humans, when we ingest glyphosate, it kills our gut flora and it also causes cancer.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, you know, about one other aspect of this thing, it's not just the food industry, but it's the cover up that different industries use. How does the so-called real world revolving door between government and food industry work?
Well, it works like this. The food industry is governed by the USDA and the FDA. And the people that serve on the government's agencies, particularly the FDA, are the same people that also work for the industry. It's called the revolving door. They go from Monsanto or another big industry, chemical agricultural industry, into the FDA and back and forth. And the most glaring example of this is Michael Taylor. Taylor worked for the FDA from 76 to 81, and then he went into private practice at a law firm that represented Monsanto, and then he returned to the FDA in 1991. Then between 1994 and 1996, he went to the USDA and acted as administrator of the Food Safety and Inspection Service, and now he's the deputy FDA commissioner appointed by President Obama in 2010. He's been appointed to be the deputy commissioner of foods. So he's basically had control over food policy since 80.
Wow. You know, Eisenhower warned us against the military-industrial complex. I think now if a president cared to and would actually warn us, which I know will not happen in the near future, he would warn us against the industrial corporate complex, because that industrial corporate complex is killing and disturbing and destroying so much of our culture and the bright things in our country, and disturbing the health and well-being of so many people throughout the world.
It is, and if you look at the sequel to An Involuntary Spy, which is To Russia for Love, you can see how the industrial corporate complex and the military industrial complex go hand in hand in a place like Ukraine, where they go into with military power and political power to try to get an economic advantage for industry.
You see, the problem is that so much of all these incursions, even ones that involve very seriously bad people like Saddam Hussein, are motivated by economic reasons. And so there's a distortion process that goes in there with the military that eventually produces chaos and pain for many, many people, including the brave soldiers who fight for us, who are I think that most of these people who are in our military and also in the police are really patriotic, good people, but they are also somewhat victimized by the people who are controlling what they do.
They're definitely victims.
And then they come back and they're not taken care of, you know, these wonderful people. And so I think that I've spoke to many veterans who feel like that in many senses they've been compromised because the mission that they've been given has not been fully stated. Let's turn the subject for a second.
I'm sorry. I mean, they're supposed to be protecting democracy or protecting from an insurgency, and they find out that they're dying just so people can make money.
Yeah, they're expanding a corporate empire.
That
is really quite the opposite of what the founding fathers wanted, but it's also the opposite. I think there was an American dream that was sort of planted by Jefferson and the founding fathers, but it was expanded greatly over the decades and centuries. And we finally got somewhere where we really had possibly a vibrant democracy that would be support minorities and women, and it would support different ethnic groups. And it was a really robust answer to that seed that was first planted, and now it's being strangled, just like our actual food supply is being strangled by the same motivations that take us into these unfortunate wars.
I agree.
Yeah, one of the products you described in the novel is called BT corn, but BT corn actually exists as a real world product. But this is what you say in the novel: to engineer BT corn, the gene known to produce the BT toxin, is forcibly inserted into the DNA of corn randomly. Both the location of the transferred gene sequence in the corn DNA and the consequences of the insertion differ with each insertion. The plant cells that have taken up the inserted gene and then grown in a lab using tissue culture and or a nutrient medium that allows them to develop the plants that are used to grow GM food products. BT corn was a form of corn that was genetically modified to produce its own toxin that would kill insects, primarily targeted at the European corn borer, an enemy of corn farmers. The same technology was used for cotton. The corn was engineered using a gene found in the soil bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis, thus the name BT. When the gene was fused with the DNA of the corn actually made its own insecticide. When insecticides ate any part of the corn plant, the toxic proteins produced by the BT gene would penetrate the linings of their stomach and they would quickly die. One of the interesting things, that was a passage from your novel about the book, is in the appendix where you break down some of the real world components about the novel. One of these is the discussion of BT corn. Could you tell us more about the modification of corn, but also soy products, which are fed to animals and the implications for that in the real world?
Sure. Modified corn and soy is in almost every food product that you buy in a box, bottle, or can. And it's also used in animal feed. In fact, a lot of animal producers and breeders are going back to natural feed because they're getting a weaker animals from it, and also they're having a big infertility problem. The GMO hydrolyzed corn syrup is used in place of sugar in almost everything that's sweetened in America. The American public is being dosed with high levels of glyphosate, antibiotic-resistant material, and potentially dangerous bacteria that nobody has any idea that they're eating. As a result, we've got an increase in diabetes. We've got an increase in cancer that's incomparable to any other society in the world. So we are, as I told you before, the world's guinea pigs for this huge experiment.
Wow. Look, I want to ask you, is there another side to this process? Is there a brighter possibility? You talk about a fictional alternative process that Seth has been playing with while he's still at Germinet. I'm going to quote from the novel. Seth was, however, working on a project he really believed in. It was called Miracle Rice. Miracle Rice was created by inserting a gene that produced beta carotene into the plant's DNA, which was hoped to solve one of the essential problems of malnutrition in young people in underdeveloped countries, vitamin A deficiency, which caused blindness. The main problem was engineering enough beta carotene in the plant. As it stood, you would have to eat 20 pounds of Miracle Rice every day to get the minimum required amount of vitamin A, something that was better imparted by supplements or even carrots. But Seth vowed not to give up. Are there really good things that can come out of this genetic manipulation?
There could be, like anything else, but right now there aren't anything that and good that can come out of it. In fact, this Miracle Rice is actually not a fictional product. There's a product called Golden Rice that claims to satisfy vitamin A deficiencies by combining rice with a gene from a dandelion that produces beta carotene. But as in my fictional Miracle Rice, a 4-year-old child would have to eat 27 bowls of rice per day to get the daily minimum recommended amount of vitamin A. So basically, they should stick to growing carrots.
Yeah, I think our kids would be even in worse shape in terms of obesity if they ate 27 bowls. But you never know. There's all kinds of possibilities out there for expanding the bad foods that we eat. So maybe we should think about the possibilities. Well, anyway, I we're going to take a break now. And when I think of the following songs by Stephanie Slevin, I think of some of those irresponsible companies and so-called political leaders, what they're doing to the earth. Still, I try to send them love. But here's a song by Stephanie called What You Have Done. She's a UK singer-songwriter, which you can find at Reverb Nation.
Look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. You broke and starved her body, and I freed you from your sin. But look what you've done to this child of mine, 'cause you let the darkness in. You cannot be saved, for I gave you a last chance. But you chose the path to darkness, and you did the devil's dance. Oh Lord. look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. Forever in her sorrow, her happiness assured. Little broken girl, nobody wants to know. And I did always love her since the age of birth, but she could not feel my love, for she felt she had no worth. Oh, look what you have done to this little child of mine. Look what you have done, for your darkness has gone blind. You can see her torment as she cries out in the rain, and I can feel her pain as she always calls my name.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
In the involuntary spy novel, you mentioned two concerns Seth has about the ingestion of GMO foods. One of these is the possibility that these foods could cause resistance to common antibiotic products. How does this actually happen, sort of from a biochemical, biological point of view?
Well, what they do is they shoot the genes into the to plants, the genes that they want to have the trait into the plants. But in the petri dish, they don't really know which genes have taken or not. So they add to them an antibiotic-resistant marker. And so this allows them to douse the petri dish after they've shot the gene gun on it and with antibiotics, and whatever doesn't die is basically antibiotic-resistant, and that's the crop that the tissue that survives. So it's postulated that this process creates antibiotic resistance in humans as well as increased allergic reactions. That was what his concern was about.
Wow. Well, you know, we had a Dr. Hugo Rodier here, a physician in Utah, talking quite a bit about autoimmune disease and the relationship with leaky gut. Could you explain something about leaky gut and its relationship to GMO products and other auto?
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, leaky gut is basically a condition where your digestive system's microbiome is not in balance with the natural flora that it needs to be in there. In other words, you need good bacteria in your digestive system in order to digest. And if you don't, then you can't digest properly, and you get all kinds of problems, leaky gut being one of them. And GMO ingestion is like I said before, one of the main products of GMO is Roundup Ready products, which increase the use of glyphosate in our system, because we're getting more glyphosate that's been sprayed on the crops. We're getting it in our guts, and it's killing our good flora and the bacteria that we actually need for you to digest your food, and throwing our microbiome completely out of whack. So this is one of the contributions that GMO is making to leaky gut.
Well, I think one of the problems with leaky gut is that certain even good food substances will get through a porous leaking intestine, get into the bloodstream, and it is attacked by our immune systems, which these T cells think that it's some kind of enemy. And
exactly.
So people have these terrible allergic reactions and all kinds of responses.
Exactly. There's a great book, actually, Johnny, that you can get. It's written by a doctor, and it's called The Microbiome Diet. And it shows you how to put your what to eat and what not to eat to put your system back in place if you're suffering from leaky gut or if you think you are.
Well, that's good information. I hadn't heard about that book.
It's a great book. I used it myself.
Well, another problem that Seth in the novel is concerned about in his experiments to test BT corn, he's finding that his, quote, test subjects were coming up with elements of neonicotinoid pesticides. Is there such a problem in the real world, and what are the dangers involved if there is?
There is. Neonicotinoid pesticides are not only used in BT crops, but in fact, every BT crop is treated with neonicotinoid pesticides. They treat the seeds themselves, and once the seed is treated, it takes up residence in every tissue of the plant, including the pollen and the nectar, which is partly responsible for the demise of the bees that we talked about in the last show.
Wow.
So these are very potent insecticides that also, since they're in every tissue, they also get into the roots, which will contaminate the soil for about 20 years, even after they've been eliminated. So if you've got a BT product that's been planted in a farmer's field, and they decide, oh no, we want to go organic, well, it's still going to be contaminated by the neonicotinoid pesticides for 20 years. It's kind of like radiation.
Wow. Well, what are the, just to review like our last show, you know, what is the status now of bee colony collapse? And what is this longevity of these pesticides? How is that going to help?
Well, it's really there's really not one particular reason that's been cited for colony collapse disorder, but one of the main factors is the use of pesticides, and the neonicotinoid pesticides have been targeted as one of the worst culprits. The problem is that the EPA has provisionally approved a lot of these pesticides in the states, which means that they were allowed to go ahead and make them commercially available without having to fully test them. And they were supposed to come back with results later. Well, that didn't happen. And now there's been a couple that have been, because of activism, a couple of new products that have been tried to be put on the market that have been blocked. But there's still a lot out there, and basically we have to work with our pocketbooks again and not buy products that have been treated in neonicotinoid pesticides, especially if you're your own gardener. Don't buy seeds that are treated with this stuff.
Well, to continue on, I think one of the most fascinating characters in The Involuntary Spy is Yuri, Seth's Russian handler for the Russian government, whose job is allegedly to protect Seth. Yuri seems practical and knowledgeable about his job, but on the other hand, he turns out to be more of a mercenary than a help. In other words, he conceives of himself as loyal to whoever pays him the highest. Somehow, I think if we have a psychological pandemic going on in the world of geopolitics, it's something like this. Yuri seems to be one of the thousands of victims whose loyalty to the highest bidder is as fragile as his commitment to the well-being of his fellow human beings. How do you understand this psychology, Ken? And do you agree that this money virus seems to have infected many of our political leaders around the globe, including perhaps the majority of our leaders in Congress, who are allowing lax regulatory practices in many different industries, including the financial industry, which might be leading the U.S. into a dollar apocalypse, and pharmaceutical companies, which are putting a Band-Aid on various ailments caused by our food industry. And there's so much more. The beat goes on. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree that most of our congressmen and women are all Yuri types. They're supposed to answer to us, the voters, but instead they answer to whoever pays the largest political contributions. I think it's human nature to pay more attention to your own personal bottom line than what's good for everyone else, but it's very dangerous when it comes to the people who are supposed to be serving the public when they're taking their own personal economic bottom line and putting it ahead of what's good for the voters. I think we have to take the profit out of politics. And I think we should do that by enacting legislation that reduces the amount that we're allowed to contribute. For example, Bernie Sanders is not taking any PAC or super PAC money. He's taking it all from regular people. I think that should be commended. It sets a good example for other politicians.
Yeah, I think that basically either you have the government itself funding the process, public elections, or there's some kind of cap, really serious cap, where people can't be bought. And maybe you have to also have some more deeper legislation about this revolving door stuff. Very dangerous.
There's got to be limits on contributions, first of all, and I think there's got to be term limits, because a lot of these people get in there for 20, 30 years, and that allows them to, buddy-buddy with all the industry and basically get into a really high power, and they're basically bought.
Yeah, it's a shame to think that that's what we're up against, but I guess that's the case.
I think so.
Yeah. So anyway, another problem. One of the results in Seth's experiments is infertility, allegedly because of the ingestion of the animals taking GM soy. Has there been any indication of damage to reproductive systems by GMO products?
Well, since most GMO studies are funded by the industry that promotes the GMO, we don't have very many studies on the subject. And the industry also contributes to most of the academic research, so it's hard to find independent studies, but the few that have been done have indicated infertility in animals such as pigs who ingest GMO feed and shrunken reproductive organs in rats that have been experimented on. And a lot, like I mentioned before, a lot of farmers who have suffered from infertility problems with their animals that they're breeding have gone back to natural food.
Yeah, like that's really important to, it's just like, I mean, what part of the body aren't they tampering with? It's really hard to guess. So
it's hard to guess, and sometimes for a lot of things, there's so many unknowns. There's, you know, we're only beginning to see the effects of GMOs on allergies, people who have food sensitivities are increased now, increase in cancer, and especially increase in obesity and diabetes.
Yeah, it is a shame. We're going to go to a break now, and we're going to play something by Edgar Arons.
Is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here, there's too many of them!" Again, this other Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070.
At what point in your novel, The Involuntary Spy, when Seth is caught, his former lab assistant and girlfriend basically refuses to interact with him again. She presumably has been threatened, as Seth is threatened at the end of the novel, to the point that he may be soon terminated by a number of parties, including Yuri. It seems that the murder or threat of murder should not be on the reach of those involved in all kinds of government cover-ups, including the assassination of presidents, the protection of government secrets, as well as the protection of the private excesses and commercial illegalities of those involved in government. Is the real world of cover-ups and threats as potent in the real world as in your novel?
Well, of course, I don't have any personal knowledge of that, but, you know, in the novel, the threat of murder is really real. While we don't see that in life, we do see through exposure such as WikiLeaks that the CIA has got assassin teams. The CIA's been using torture, and like you mentioned before, the use of drone strikes. We see that in real life. So I think that from all this evidence, we can infer that murder is alive and well behind the scenes, and it's being used by our government whenever they need to use it.
One of the experiments that Seth does shows that the BT toxin seems to create erratic cell growth in the lower part of the small intestine. I guess that's in rats. Is there any concern that GMO products could facilitate cancer?
There is. There are studies that the BT toxin has breached the ileum, which is the bottom part of the small intestine where it empties into the colon. There's been studies where BT has been found in the bloodstream of babies whose mothers have ingested the GMO products. And the World Health Organization, as I mentioned before, has determined that glyphosate probably causes cancer. So all of the GMOs, which are the Roundup Ready GMOs, are not cancerous per se because of their own chemical constitution, but they're soaked with high levels of glyphosate, which causes cancer. And by ingesting those GMO products, we're getting the glyphosate, and it's causing a cancer problem.
Yeah, we had just been talking about murder on individual levels, but there's also when you create very bad food products or very bad products in general that people ingest or use in different ways, and you know that they're going to be hurt or killed, that is kind of a really serious thing. So anyway,
don't worry, Johnny. We've got the pharmaceuticals industry, which will help cure all those people who get the cancer and the diabetes from ingesting GMO food.
Well, good luck for that.
Yep.
The United States has obviously been lax in letting the DNA cat out of the bag and losing GMO products in the United States and the world without any kind of real scientific oversight, except those involved in producing GMOs. And as I mentioned before, I think in certain ways this is parallel to other industries. What other countries have other countries done to protect their citizens from GMOs, for instance, in the European Union, in China, in India, or Russia?
Well, the European Union has legislation right now that is against the current development of GMOs, but it leaves regulation up to the independent states. So what you've got is every country in Europe except for Spain, Poland, and the Czech Republic doesn't allow them. But in those three countries, they are allowed. They're currently banned in Russia until they can be proven safe, which Russia doesn't feel they are safe at this point. So until they can be proven safe, they're banned in Russia of all places. But China basically is a free-for-all, and India is a very sad case. India is being highly promoted on GMOs, and India suffers from suicides of farmers who've been forced to take GMO seeds, which have caused poor yields and has basically destroyed their individual economies and forced them to take their own lives when their crops fail to produce the minimum yields.
Well, let me give a quote that sort of backs you up completely on here by Colin Todd Hunter, who wrote a 2013 article called Genetically Engineered Terminator Seeds, Death and Destruction of Agriculture. Quote, previously farmers just replanted their own seeds and exchanged them among themselves. As with forced enclosure of common land in England hundreds of years ago, ordinary farmers today are being denied access to their heritage too, the common exchanging, saving, evolving, and breeding of seeds. By using various legal and political instruments through seed monopolies and seed patenting, big agribusiness has taken over the cotton seed market, especially in India, which you just mentioned, where over 90 to 95% of all cotton is now genetically modified and controlled by big corporations. Again, 90 to 95%. It is frequently argued that the high debt incurred by Indian farmers and resultant farmer suicides, over 250,000, Ken, since 1997, have largely resulted from the need to purchase costly pesticides and expensive seeds every year because they contain they think they contain a terminator gene. What is is there a truth to that about the terminator genes? It's true that Monsanto did experiment with them and has created them, but have they ever been actually put out there?
As far as I know, they haven't yet. Monsanto's original idea was to make these GMO plants sterile, so you had to come back to them to buy the seeds. But of course, the U.S. Supreme Court is not allowing farmers to reproduce or to, patented GMO seeds. They're forced to go back to Monsanto and the other distributors who own the patents on the seeds to purchase them and not create their own seed inventory. So I don't think it's out there, but the technology is there. And since there's no Terminator seeds, there's another bad thing that's happening, and that's that GMO products are contaminating non-GMO products that are in neighboring fields. They're pollinating the non-GMO products and contaminating them. So,
oh my God. I mean,
yeah, so they're terminating anyway. It's the, it's like the Terminator. It's like the Schwarzenegger of GMO.
They're terminating us. That's what you really mean, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Obviously, the major company we've been discussing is Monsanto in this discussion, and you're not alone in fearing the outreach of this company commercially and the effect that is already reaped in the world of agriculture. Do you feel like there should be some kind of prohibition on the kind of research that companies do in terms of creating things that are potentially toxic or dangerous on purpose and then saying, okay, well, we won't use them now, we'll use them later?
Well, you know, it's a great thing to say there should be a prohibition, but there's not even a prohibition. There's not even there's not even a enforcement in place on what was supposed to keep us safe. So they can basically do whatever they want to do, no matter what the laws are, because the enforcers are the companies themselves through the revolving door.
Wow. What we're going to do now is we're going to play an interesting little song called Change by the great songwriters Zeb Nathan and Bonnie Blazak. So if you don't mind, let's go ahead and play the song called Change. Change is about what we need to do in this world in order to actually affect something, even something as seemingly impossible as what we're talking about today, the GMO products. And it's just that it's time for a change. And so let's listen to this song.
That in the midst of death, life persists. In the midst of untruth, truth persists. In the midst of darkness, light persists.
Change, change our minds. about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on Earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope,
change,
and build a better life for their children.
We make change.
Peace for all men and women. Peace in all time.
Russian composer Edgar Aaron for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
In Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who is a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of the stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy, we ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
You know, we've been talking about your book, but let's talk about your actual writing itself. I know that you felt, like you explained, kind of desiring to become a writer for some time before you actually did. What was right. It like? I mean, what do you think, what was inside of you that produced this such a creative tension that you would actually step out of doing, being fully concentrated on the legal profession to produce these works?
I just felt I had a story inside me that needed to be told, and I feel like sometimes I'm the conduit for that, and just the ideas come and the story just pops out of me. It just comes out. So it's as natural as getting up in the morning and breathing.
You know, Leonard Cohen, in his speech, which he gave accepting an award in Spain, talks about how he's a kind of he feels like he's a steward of perhaps a higher power, whatever. He doesn't completely feel that it's totally him that's creating this. I wake up in the middle of the night and I get large segments of dialogue. I see things that are happening. It's not like I'm sitting down and saying, I'm going to write this particular thing. It just kind of flows from some other place. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I get in a point where I get stuck. And people always say, well, what do you do about writer's block? Well, what I do is I go away from the computer, I go outside, I take a walk with my dog, and in the fresh air, as I'm walking, it just comes to me. What I need for the scene just comes to me. So, yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said that a lot of a writer's work is not sitting down at a computer or a typewriter or whatever it used to be, but it's basically off the form of the actual writing. It's coming to you from, to me, it's a revelatory process. And because I work in different media, I've had lots of experience of different kinds of it. And it's truly amazing. And I can't give myself credit for a lot of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, what's next? What are you working on right now?
Actually, I just put a book to edit. It's the sixth book in the Brent Marks legal thriller series. It's called Absolute Intolerance, and it concerns Brent Marks is defending a gay couple for their right to be married, and a serial killer actually kills the gay couple, and Brent ends up defending the guy who is accused of killing them. So it's kind of convoluted and where intolerance meets ethics.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And I want to thank everybody. And homage to the great Hassan Khan, who helps me with almost everything that we need to make this program actually come alive. And we want to also thank Patricia Welch and Edgar Ahrens for their music, and Stephanie Slevin. Thank you so much.
Hey, Johnny.
See ya.